had been away. Haven't changed, had much to say.
Back on Downtown, I assume this is the song in everybody's heads last week when 161 returned to the stage. We'll hear more about it. It's time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, Downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan with us. Hello, Eric.
Well, hello, Radioland. How's everybody doing out there? I hope well.
Oh, fabulous, fabulous. I was so sorry to miss you guys. I was out, where was I? Delaware. It was a little tough commute.
Yeah, yeah, you were hanging it up. That's okay. That's all right.
But I heard it went great.
Yeah, there'll be more opportunities. It went pretty darn good. It was a lot of fun, and it felt good. You know, I think the most important thing is for anybody who gets on a stage, you know, most of us, yourself included, who do it, we don't do it for the retirement savings. We do it because it fulfills some sick need. It was great. It was cool. And, you know, I know it's ridiculous, but there's very little better than, you know, like winking at your son when you're playing rock and roll and he's, you know, watching the audience, things like that. Hey, there's no money that could pay for that. So it was really cool. We are we're going to be playing for the waterfront ticket holder season into something on the 25th. That's a private engagement, but we're very excited that they decided to have us, and I'm sure that we'll be doing some other public gigs in the future because it felt great to all of us. It was really cool. As long as those gigs come at rational times, that is something I will say for the Orono Brewing Company. God bless them for the 6 to 8 performance time. when you can rock and roll and still be in bed by 10, oh, you are doing it right, my friend. So. That was great. I got Amari Cooper on my fantasy team, and now he's great. The Giants are doing their part to keep in the hunt for one of the top picks, and that is great. My Devils posted history by beating the new Utah Hockey Club for the first time in history, and they're looking beautiful. Things are not so bad, and business is good, and it's been nice to see so many of you in the store. Normally this is such a quiet time, but it's been really cool to see you all. And by the way, quick reminder. Currently, we are Tuesdays to Saturdays only right now from 10 to 6. Just so, you know, just to get that out there. I was going to do that at the end, but I might as well bring it up now. And it is just me here at the store, but hopefully that's a good thing, right? You can say hello. Just got in a bunch of oils and vinegar and stuff like that, by the way, which we had been waiting for a while because of all the weird shipping things coming across the nation and so forth. So that's cool. And today we're going to talk about Washington State and Washington State wines. So we have we briefly talked last week about the Lake Missoula glacial dam eruptions and things like that. So let's chat about that again really quick. So, just remember in the end of the last ice age, so we're talking about 12,000, BC, you had, an awful lot of, recessing and progressing ice sheets, in the Canadian area. Just above Montana, Idaho, etc. And there was an enormous glacial lake named Lake Missoula, and it had a 2,000-foot-high ice dam that burst a lot, slash and or a comet hit one of those ice sheets. And either way, deluges of water that we really can't comprehend. And I say that with all respect to people down south who have seen some awful deluges of water. This is stuff that dwarfs that by magnitudes. And it created what we know now as the Scablands in Washington. It created just massive river gorges that we talked about a little bit last week when we were talking about Oregon. the Willamette Valley, the Rogue River Valley. So today we're talking a little bit more about Washington, but Washington and Oregon both share the Columbia Valley, and that is, of course, the major wine-producing region of Washington State. There is wine production in the Puget Sound area. It's not really known for that, you know, basically from, you know, the Canadian border and Vancouver, even, you know, north of the border, south to around Olympia, Washington. There's stuff, but it's interesting experiments into like Germanic varietals. It's getting there, but it's not there yet. The Columbia Valley, on the other hand, is an enormous wine producer. It's the second biggest producer in the United States. However, it's not even 10% of what California produces, so you can sort of get the idea there. And it is it's basically desert. So there are 17-hour summer days. There are brutal Arctic winds, which is okay in the way that it's, like, not good for phylloxera, for instance. So, sorry, I just, writing a note to someone in here. It's not good for phylloxera, but it's also not necessarily good, especially if you have, like, early bud break, because it can freeze your buds. But because it's bad for phylloxera, you have a lot of vines planted on original rootstock and you don't have to graft. So is that good? Is it bad? It's what it is. As I said, desert. So it requires irrigation and or wells, but water being a constant source of concern, it can and probably will in the future become an issue when water is becoming increasingly scarce. So they're working on that right now, trying a lot of experiments into dry farming. So why is it a desert? Because there's the Cascade Range of mountains that basically holds all the water. As soon as the precipitation comes in from the ocean, it hits the mountains and then it basically stops. How did wine get there? Wine got there predominantly in the 1870s, 1880s. German and Italian immigrants first made wine. And then, of course, our favorite thing, Prohibition, kind of stopped it down. They were, Maine was the first, but they were one of the early adopters of Prohibition as well, and basically kind of shut down everything. And then what ended up happening, wine came back because a bunch of University of Washington home winemakers created what's called the Associated Vintners, and that eventually became Columbia, which everybody knows, you know, Columbia Crest, etc. And then two other small wineries that had existed merged to become Chateau Saint-Michel. Chateau Saint-Michel at one point owned 2/3 of all the vineyards in Washington State. They kind of became a big deal. They also recently sold, by the way, which will affect people who, you know, tended to buy those wines. I mean, they're still well made, but it's always worth just being aware when people, you know, buy out leading concerns and see what they do. What we're happening now is now that that's all broken down, we're having a lot of smaller wine makers come in, a lot of consultants coming in, and you know, sort of reconfiguring the things, and like I said, sort of setting them up for the dry farming, etc., that's going to come soon. Anyway, I hate to be rude, but I have a customer here staring at me, and I'm going to go help him buy some cheese. I will talk to you all next week, and in the meantime, everybody stay cool, and Rich, I'll talk to you soon.
That sounds great. I assume the note you wrote was, "I'm being held hostage on the radio," so now you're free.
I'm being held hostage on the radio, but he said, "Hostage on the radio? How does that even work?" All right, I'll talk to you.
Thanks, bye. Eric. Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the Bottle every Tuesday here on Downtown